Hey everybody, you're listening to Top Quartile, where we bring you stories from the front lines of growth in community-focused financial services. Hello and welcome. I'm Dan Marks, partner and EVP at Infusion, and my guest today is Matt Allen, who's the CMO at Flagstar Bank. Matt, how are you?
I'm well. Thanks for having me, Dan.
Absolutely. It's great to have you on the show. As we get started, tell everyone a little bit about you and your work at Flagstar.
Sure. I came to Flagstar about 5 years ago, a little over that now, and was tasked with helping them turn their marketing department into something that was a little more forward and customer facing. We had been a pretty reactionary from telling our story. The bank had been in a big turnaround and had been really inwardly focused. And so for the first time in its history, the bank was ready to build a brand that reflected the story and ethos of the bank and to get a little more proactive in customer acquisition and targeting. And so that's what I and my team have been lucky enough to work on for the past 5 years.
Yeah, awesome. Tell a little more about your background that led up to joining Flagstar 5 years ago.
Sure. So I came to Flagstar from a Nationwide Bank, which was a digital bank that was owned by Nationwide Insurance Company in Columbus, Ohio. Had a great 8-year stint there, helped to grow that bank really significantly. And some of our have that experience of how much fun that is to really take a small concept and help to grow it exponentially. Not everybody gets that opportunity, and I was really lucky to work with some great folks there to do that. Before that, I had been with a company called Origin Financial that was specifically focused on chattel finance and mortgage lending, and before that with a traditional mortgage lender. And prior to that, I was with GE Capital for a number of years across the country in a number of different roles.
Yeah, man. Great background. And so what's maybe one surprising or fascinating thing that most people don't know about Matt Allen?
I don't know if I could describe anything about me as fascinating. I would be inviting some really deliberate social ridicule. I don't know if anything is about me is fascinating. What a lot of people wouldn't guess is I went through college on an ROTC scholarship. And so I did all that basic infantry training and went through airborne school and jumped out of 5 perfectly good airplanes. So that was kind of my pre-start, and you'd never know it to look at me because I'm a complete slug today compared to the hard-driving airborne corps that I was lucky enough to be a part of for a little while.
Oh, I don't believe that at all. And thanks for your service. Appreciate you defending freedom for a number of years there.
Well, there are a lot of folks who did an awful lot more than I did. I was just glad to be a part of it.
All right. Yeah. So you talked about this kind of mandate at Flagstar to really transform the function and really a true kind of forward, the growth focused, building the brand, driving growth, which is a hallmark of modern marketing. And part of that is I hear that you used customer analytics to really drive that shift. Can you talk more about just the nature of the shift that you drove and what led to it?
Absolutely. Careful what you ask for. It's one of my favorite things to talk about. But it's the one thing that I would redefine there is it's a shift we're still driving today, right? It's a journey. And we're not there, but we're further than we were when we started, and we get a little further every day. The big shift for us was being proactive and deliberate about the story we wanted to tell about ourselves, making sure that it was genuine, and deliberate about who we wanted to tell that story to. As simple a concept as a target customer, what that means, how you decide who that target customer is, how you zero in on them, how you judge your progress in the customer base, and how you design and deliver both your communications and your services targeted to that specific customer. That's been the journey around every aspect of what we do, from the brand and messaging that we develop, having it reflect the true ethos of the company and what we stand for and our values, but also bringing that home specifically to the target customer that we think is the best fit for us and that we're designed to serve. And then all our analytics reinforce this is why that's the right target customer. This is how we can have differentiating value for them. And here's how we're doing with them. They overweight in our scorecard, and we got to make sure that we're taking care of them and providing good value to them throughout. And that's been from customer analytics everything from the sizing of what the opportunity looks like with those individual customers, what they stack up to in aggregate, and what share of them we're winning, and if our messaging is resonating with them more than it does the overall general public. Those are really important measures that we simply weren't doing before because we weren't really sure or tight on who that customer was or even how we'd measure them differently than general public.
So what was the marketing approach or the go-to-market approach pre-shift where you are on the journey?
Yeah, great question, Dan. Flagstar's background, Flagstar's history is really interesting in that Flagstar started as a nationwide mortgage lender and had a really thriving business there and acquired a bank, a community bank, and looked at that as a cheaper source of funding than a warehouse line. And so while the core of that community bank was a really good community bank that delivered really great service, took exceptional care of their customers, it was a pretty small community bank. So to grow it quickly and to grow that funding base, it was really a rate-driven offer. And so it was the internet bank before internet banks were cooking. It was a really thin branch network, and it was a really exceptional rate compared to other rates in the market. And so our marketing consisted largely of rate delivered through the CD sections and newspapers, rates on billboards. You didn't see Flagstar advertising or marketing without it being led with a really attractive rate. And at the end of the day, what the exec team came to realize over time was, while that had been terrific for bringing money in the door, if we wanted to grow relationships with customers and not have the perpetual churn of that hot money base, we needed to start to build relationships rather than transactions. And we needed to shift more from that incremental hot money spend to core banking relationships that would look like the traditional checking account relationship and build and grow from there.
Yeah, fascinating. So what sort of research and analysis did you employ to identify and set the stage for that shift?
So the journey was really interesting and different than I would have planned it, right? So, you know, there's...
very honest.
absolutely. And so where we started was I jumped in to the new role with a lot of energy and a lot of really crisp ideas about how this was going to go and started running around the building and trying to define with all our disparate business groups who our target customer was. And what we figured out was everybody had a different answer to that question. And trying to aggregate them back into a centralized strategy proved to be a really interesting exercise. And so we did it backwards. We worked backwards and we figured out, okay, if everybody's talking to a different target customer and we can't seem to agree on that, let's figure out what we can agree on. And we wrestled around who we were and what we wanted to stand for. And finally, what we got to was a uniform agreement. And I can, it still gives me chills to think about the exec team session in which this happened in a big interactive workspace. We'd been wrestling around for weeks on a couple of these significant branding exercises. What we finally unified around was what our noble purpose is. What's the why behind the brand? And that was clear and concise and articulated as we exist to make everyone we touch successful. That's the core purpose of our business. And there was not a dissenter in the room. Everybody immediately aligned to that. And then we pivoted from there and started to build the rest of our messaging and identity based on that. And eventually where that led us was telling our story in a very authentic way, focused first more on ourselves and then looking at who the customer was that story resonated with. And that took us to a really exciting target customer that is interested in a meaningful relationship with their bank, not just transactions, interested in active engagement with their finances, interested in managing and working a plan and expecting more out of their money, their life, their transactions than just baseline service and baseline product fit.
Yeah, really important fundamentals. That's hard work given that background. And so talk about, you know, that was a working session. Can you give some examples of the sorts of customer analysis you did to help tee up those tough discussions?
Yeah, that was a prerequisite for all that market analysis. So once we built that customer profile, we did a ton of market testing on if we lay out our story, who's the segment with whom that story resonates? Now, can we look alike model that story? What's their size in the marketplace? What's their relative financial strength? What opportunity does that represent? How does that differ by the markets that we're in? Because geographic distributions are really interesting. You know, the small town in which the community bank started looks really different than the Detroit metro area that we're in today as our corporate headquarters, and looks really different than the California or Indiana markets that we also have significant footprint in and serve. And not just that target customer and their relative financial makeup in each of those markets, but what share of their wallet and spend did we gain when we gained that customer? And what was their retention rate compared to non-target customers? You guys are fond of talking about, boy, the best indicator of where there's money to be had is if somebody's got money with you, they've probably got money with somebody else. And that turned out to be very true in our existing customer base. And those were the measures of share of wallet ownership, individual relationship potential. Those measures were a big deal in convincing us that there was enough runway beyond our strategy to invest in it.
Yeah. It's that sort of, some people talk just about pure share of wallet. But and then some people talk about lookalike modeling or next most likely purchase, but you really have a lot of power when you bring both those together, that capacity and propensity factor. So what are some of those other steps that you took to build the case and gain buy-in? I mean, it seems like talk about a seismic shift.
Yeah, that's still hand-to-hand combat. We're still wrestling that through. And in fairness, that's because the fight changes as you grow. And so for us, it was, boy, do we really need to make this investment in analytics and analytic partners to build the capacity to speak with confidence about where that opportunity is or how our performance benchmarks against others. Like, so that was a really big shift for us, but it's a very numbers and outcome focused company. And so as we could commit to those things and lay out the roadmap to them, that took care of itself. The continued investment in driving the shift in the customer base, because as you change strategy, that doesn't change the book that you're servicing. That takes right. time to move along. And the buy-in piece is ongoing. And at least in its best days, it's a analytics driven exercise to say, hey, when we look at the book, here's one of the big opportunities that we see, here's how we want to prioritize it, and here's how we pro forma what that looks like. Here's the thing we've done that's closest to this, and if it performed about like that, or we think it'll perform a little better or a little worse based on these factors. So lots and lots of pro formas, lots of database discussions, and lots of alignment on, hey, here are the three big goals that we're trying to move in the book. This is the effort that we think we need to get there, and let's test and learn our way to it together.
Yeah, that's so critical. And so what are some of those implementation steps that you've taken or maybe are taking?
Yeah, so for us, the big implementation step and the hardest one was really building that marketing analytics environment, building that comprehensive customer view from all the different business units that we serve, where you can see everything that you need to see about that customer, but also be able to append external data, apply models, and manipulate that, have that be a workable, pliable space. And that's still a work in progress. We still continue to change requirements and push that a little further, it seems like, every quarter. But that was the biggest implementation step for us, is getting to a point where you are confident in your analytics-driven view of the customer is a really big foundational step that is you can't cheat your way around.
And oh, yeah.
So that was the biggest. I think beyond that, it was a series of little steps driven by incremental improvement. Okay, so here's our general approach. We've got an analytical framework that we've laid out a templated view or a pro forma in. Let's get that into market. We're confident that we're tracking at least enough of the results directionally that we'll be able to tell success, failure, or difference from expected performance. And then let's pull that result back and share that with the business, debate it with them, talk about whether it met their expectations, and if their expectations were different than ours, why was that? Because we talked about this together and planned it. And there's some of that learning and cycle that continues to happen. And then for us, it's we're still on the road of getting all our channels to work together like chess pieces. They are far more isolated than they should be. There are places where we're playing checkers when others are playing chess. There's no question about it. but we're getting to the point where analytically we're capable of supporting a lot more than we have in the past across channels and diverse channel customer journeys.
Yeah, and I think the journey is, you talked on that. To me, the journey is a great sort of evolution of the marketing metaphors. The funnel seems so nice and neat, you know, so math-like, but the real world's a little more chaotic.
You certainly can path web pages in a funnel, but boy, if you try to make customers live within that nice diagram, they have some things to say about that, and a lot of them tend to disappear halfway through. So, that zero moment of truth kind of map is, I think, about as close as I've come.
Yeah, for sure. So what are some of the tactics that you've taken along that journey that you want to highlight, that you think makes sense to highlight?
Yeah. So for me, the biggest surprises in order of occurrence were the business was really sensitive about our acquisition messaging and how we were going to keep that firewalled from our existing base. And so I kind of poo-pooed that and built a little more at speed and scale. And then quickly realized when you're using promo rates aggressively for acquisition, boy, keeping that firewall and understanding how that works can have really negative implications for your existing base of customers. And so that was what I found out there was our shared householding capability was not nearly as strong as I thought it was and had some significant holes in it. And so that was a really big learning. And that was part of the case made to enhance our analytical environment, to really get us confident that we were looking at customers in the right way. So that was a really big learning along the way. Tactically, the things that have been most surprising or most important to me are the relative importance of the existing customer base and that early customer onboarding journey as opposed to raw prospecting, right? Everybody's focused on prospecting or conquest, but boy, if you're looking to change your existing book, certainly prospecting has to be part of that. But you got to fight a two-front war where you can change your targeting up front, but boy, you've also got to change your engagement model and service to the existing book and change the onboarding journey for that newly acquired customer so that you're deepening and expanding relationships right out of the gate and not putting them through whatever your prior path was. And that's been a really significant change for us in getting to deeper relationships faster and being more deliberate about how we engage, cross-sell, and prioritize from the customer's point of view rather than from our financial goal standpoint. Really finding out what folks need and making sure that's what's on the tip of the spear for us to offer to them, not just what we think the right acquisition path is.
Yeah, for sure. Customers have, like you said, have more choices than ever before. And so if you're not relevant, then you're going to miss the next time.
And being really brutally honest about where you're relevant and competitive and where you're an also-ran can be a really important spur for growth in a business.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah, it was a Jim Collins who said, look, be brutally honest with yourself. Don't kid yourself. And you spot on.
Confront the brutal facts. That's right. Yep.
That's right.
So when you're looking at the objective that you're trying to drive, that almost always is focused on large scale acquisition goals, always force the discussion around what's this mean for the existing base or how might I further this goal in existing base treatment? Because without fail to date, we've been able to accomplish significantly more by working with, addressing, and massaging the existing book than we have with external acquisition, just because of the nature of those relationships and how much more opportunity you have with them because of your preferred position.
Absolutely. The data that we've seen continues to bear out exactly what you're saying. It's the old adage of it's cheaper to keep or grow your current customer than acquire a completely cold prospect. It just shows up in the data.
It's so true. For us, it's even in a win back perspective, right? Like it's even more efficient to win those folks back once they've exited than it would be starting with someone brand new.
because they already have some propensity to work with you. Well, what are some of those adjustments? You talked about a few already. What other kind of adjustments have you made on this journey that you're talking about?
So I think we're perpetually changing our expectation around the data environment. We started with one set of attribution that we found easy to implement with the limited analytical ability that we had. We're in the process of evolving that to another set of attribution that is more reflective of digital touches and mass media touches. So that's been important for us. The other adjustments that we've made along the way have had to do largely with our targeting, right? So we've evolved that target customer. We've really focused on, and I want to be clear, I know your target audience here is marketers, but I you talked about the change agency and how you bring people along and get them to alignment. Just the concept of target customer. And that is a non-exclusionary concept,
which is a
really big thing for us, right? Like, I'm not saying I don't want the other customers. I'm not saying they're not great people and that their money isn't green and that we don't care about their experience. I'm just saying we got to pick a target and then everything else flows around that. But that set of adjustment and getting tighter and more refined about not only the demographics, but the psychographics around our customer base and the attitudinal segmentation of how they break down has been really important, not just for messaging, but also for product and experience design. So the tighter we are on that target customer and the more robust we can be in understanding their needs, not just in product and demographic terms, but also in their need for reassurance or their need for additional consultation and when they're most open to that and how, because boy, that's gotten exponentially more complicated with all the channels that we can deliver that through. That's been an adjustment that we're struggling to make real. We were really exceptional at that in the branches, and we're trying very hard to figure out how to replicate that digitally and telephonically for folks.
Yeah, it's so true. And you mentioning that reminds me of some of the past conversations I've had. It seems like our compliance partners are the ones that, which they're doing their job. They hear target and they assume exclusionary, and that's not it at all. It's a matter of emphasis. And so just walking through I've had some great partners in the past on that front, but others, but just introducing that idea of a target, and I think you put it well, it's not exclusionary.
Yeah, that's learning across the businesses that we serve, our compliance partners, but even for some of my marketers that think, boy, if I acquire a customer who doesn't turn out to be 90% target, that's not a great thing. And that's not how we think about it. That's not how we should be thinking about it.
How do you think about it?
For me, I think about it as incrementally refining our targeting to whether we're talking about for mass media to deliver more of that specific target customer view, for DM, making that a part of the scorecard as what do we bring in here in terms of dollars and accounts, and then a separate measure that says of those, what percentage your target customer? Because you've built your target presumably around higher intrinsic value from a retention or growth opportunity standpoint. And so it's got to be part of your value equation, but it certainly shouldn't be exclusionary in terms of the value of non-targeted customers acquired. If you're looking at significant acquisition that is non-target customer, you got to go back and figure out why is that performing differently than my expectation. There may be opportunity there that you haven't thought about.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's that test and learn philosophy. And you talked earlier about just how even testing and learning with tools, the tools you use and that kind of stuff, it's a refinement of the tool chest, not just the outcomes. Give us a flavor. What are some of the outcomes and impact you've seen from the strategic shift that you've been talking about?
I think the biggest difference for us has been our relationships per customer have turned the corner and started to increase in a significant way. And I'm not at a point where I can quantify for you what that means in terms of retention beyond anecdotally, but that's the end goal, is to have that deeper, more meaningful relationship with the customer base that not only gives you the license and the trust to offer more, bigger, deeper, and more meaningful, but with a customer that's more likely to stick around and that you have the chance to grow that relationship with over time. So what we've seen is customers we acquire today are adding secondary and tertiary relationships at a significantly higher rate than where we were when we first started measuring that path 4.5 years ago. And that's attributable to two different things that are happening at the same time. The first is that change in targeting that we talked about, but the second is the path that we put them through that more actively gauges what they're interested in and more unabashedly offers that to them through multiple touches, right? Through that onboarding journey, recognizing it's not, onboarding is not just getting you the product that you came for and getting you settled into that and served. It's also figuring out what other underlying needs are there and making those cross sells available to you throughout. So there's been a significant shift in that. Now that's still a really small part of the book, right? But boy, if you segment that part of the book, it's behaving significantly differently. And so building on that and driving that change into the rest of the book is going to be a game changer. It's just a question of the pace at which we can do it. So that's been a really big difference in outcome for us. We also have had the really significant modeling wins that you expect when you're going from a generalized model approach to a custom model approach. We found, you know, specific campaigns where we've been able to cut out 40% of the target audience and maintain 80% or 90% of the return. Mm-hmm. So those, you know, businesses love those as you are freeing up more funds for incremental or experimental spend, because you've kept the income coming in the door with lower overhead. But those are smaller and to me less significant than the larger shift, which is just gaining better explanation about where more and more of our customers came from and why they chose us. That doesn't just make us better marketers tomorrow. It sets our partners up in the business to serve those customers better because they have a more clear understanding of what they're after and what they're expecting of us.
Yeah, so important. So kind of sum up, Matt, we've covered a lot of ground. What are maybe two or three key takeaways that you might provide others who might be about to embark on or thinking about embarking on kind of a similar journey?
The key takeaways for me are really understand your organizational culture and why the change is needed. It took me probably, I'm trying to think what that time span was from when I walked into the door to when we had that meeting that I was telling you about where we finally had a breakthrough and got to our shared vision. But I want to say that was probably 6 really intensive weeks. And there's no replacing that hard work because that became the foundation for change. And as you're wrestling that through, the couple key takeaways are be really clear about the case for change and why it's required. Because even though you're going to take that in and internalize it, your partners are going to be doing their day jobs. And so you're going to have to bring them back to that important moment to drive change. Secondly, don't look for the big, massive, cataclysmic change that you need to drive. Just look for those incremental steps that are closer to that destination than you are today. You said it really well with some of the test and learn stuff we were talking about a few minutes ago. You don't have to change the entire book. You just have to make the new book markedly better than the old. And as long as you're doing that every time you're kicking off a cycle, a new book, boy, you are changing that entire book and you are building an annuity for your business and for your brand as you drive forward. It's easy to look at, wow, I've driven a really significant seismic shift. Yeah, that's true and that's big. But the way you do that is by getting sharper, better, more efficient every day. And if you're clear on that reason for change, that's an easy destination to set.
So well said. All right. So Matt, as we wrap up here, maybe a little bit of fun at the end. So if you could go back in time and sit down with that young ROTC officer and give him some words of wisdom about life or business or whatever, what would you tell your younger self?
This is where, if I'm not careful, you'd really have to edit out some of the mistakes that I wish that kid hadn't made. Not to be cliche, but for the majority of folks, having a really clear decision about who you want to be and what you think is important. And by that, I don't mean what job you want to do. I don't mean the small stuff. The big answers around what do you want to be known for? What are the principles by which you want to live your life? So that you can focus more on internal scorecarding and benchmarking than external. It's the same way in running a department, right? Like it's you got to be less worried about the opinions of others and more focused on the excellence that you can measure and benchmark. And if you're focused on that, if you're focused on continuous improvement every single day and relentless measurement against it, everything else is a cakewalk.
Yeah, that I have an inkling that younger Matt implied some of those principles. So
you should at least be certain that my kids are tired of hearing that story.
That's right. Yeah. So, Matt, thanks for a great discussion, man.
Thanks for having me. This was a lot of fun, Dan, and I'm looking forward to seeing the rest of the series.
That's it for today on Top Quartile. If you haven't already, be sure to subscribe to Top Quartile wherever you find podcasts on any podcast app. And while you're at it, we'd really appreciate a 5-star rating. And if you're interested in getting an opportunity assessment, head over to infusionmarketinggroup.com to learn more. Thanks for listening.